And you're very welcome to another edition, the first edition of 2025 Solid Foundations Property Podcast with myself, Corey Kilfordy. Who else have we got?
Lisa O'Reilly from Solid Foundations. How are you keeping?
Yeah. I'm all good now. And we have a special guest today, but we'll come to him very shortly indeed. So 2025, Lisa, did you enjoy the break, first of all? Have you put on the Christmas stone like the rest of us? Probably not. You were away behaving yourself on holidays, were you?
I was away for a week, but yeah, definitely put up a few stone. I'm heading up to Australia next week, actually. So all fun and games. It's all fun and games. I can't wait.
All fun and games, exactly. And it's a new era. It's a clean slate. The first of all, if you've got goals in 2025, hopefully you haven't broken them already. But we're back with a bang, Lisa. Very busy first month anyway, getting back, getting up, getting run. It just flies by January, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. And I think everybody's kind of starting their projects in January. So we were really busy trying to get people housed for the first 3 weeks of January. It was a pretty crazy time. So we're just starting to settle back into it there now and kind of maybe take some stock and maybe actually strategize for what's 2025 to hold for us, for the business, you know.
Yes,
and how about yourself, Corey? Have you
word strategize? Yeah, no, we're up and running. Yeah, our second HMO is currently underway. We're at the plastering stage, so whenever you get a bit of plaster, you think, yeah, we're starting to get there. It was great crack getting it over the line, and just to get out of the storm. I suppose we're just after the storm here in Ireland as well. So Storm Ione, or however you pronounce it, you know, no damage, thankfully. But yeah, no, closing in on a couple of more deals. So this year's pipeline looking good. Also just getting back into the raising of finance and working on that. And also the property meets are starting up once again. I was over in England as well. We started off on the 11th of January over Prosperity, a network over in the UK. Some of the guys one of the guys have been on the podcast so far. So yeah, got me going. Really enjoyed it, Lisa, has to be said. I know it's early in January to do something like that, but I love it because it gets you focused, doesn't it? You were away.
Yeah, so I did the same. So I'm going back to the UK after about a 2-year break to go over Kevin McDonnell over in the UK there with Progressive Properties. So basically, I'm going over to him now once a month just to kind of look. It's great to surround yourself with these people because, you know, they're doing it all day, every day, and you learn off of people, you know. And happy to jump on a plane and get some knowledge. Yeah.
You learn so much, and you only think you're doing a lot, but you're not really. But no, different markets, and again, it's good to be surrounding yourself with people, like-minded people who are working at that level and trying to get to the next level. But anyway, the first of the Solid Foundations, we had a huge response throughout the year, loads of downloads, and they love having the guests on. They love having, well, they don't mind listening to us talk nonsense, but we love to get people in the property sector, and there's no better sector than the law end of things. I love getting these guys, and there's one lad, I suppose, Lisa, I've got to know him over the last number of years, and he is a proper property solicitor. We know the benefit of having someone like this because it's like everything in life. Some people dabble in certain sectors. We like to have, and you need to have, someone who knows specifically about property investment, because how difficult is it, Lisa, when you have one end trying to deal with the other end and the other end don't have a bloody clue what you're on about and you're trying to get a deal together. So I'm delighted to say we've Will Wilson. He's head of conveyancing for Lacey Solicitors. Will, how are you? You're very welcome to the first edition of the Solid Foundations Property Podcast, and hopefully you haven't put on the Christmas stone.
Well, thanks very much, Parik. I'm doing well, and I think one stone would be a dream. So it would be the amount I ate over Christmas, to be honest with you.
So, well, for our listeners who don't know you, I know you well, obviously. You work along with me at the Northwest Property Meets, and we've been doing some deals together and things like that. And but tell our listeners and everyone about your experience in the beautiful world of conveyancing and actually property conveyancing. It's great crack, Will, isn't it?
Crag is an understatement for the way it is. Essentially, I deal with anything, and I've always had a passion for property. But I would deal with any type of deal with property, may it be purchasing, sales, from your tenancies, landlord advice, HMOs, serviced accommodation, and then what I'm sure Lisa and yourself will probably want to get into is what I like to call the funky stuff, which would be your more creative thinking ideas, the more specialist changing of the conditions of contracts to suit for delayed completions and the like that there. Anything really to do with property and I'll get involved with it. Just don't come to me if you're looking, if you've got caught speeding, it'll probably get you jail time rather than 3 points. So would
suppose on the conversation around solicitors and things like that, and we've been analysing what Wool specialises in, and we're going to touch on that very shortly. But your experience down through the years working with solicitors, how have you enjoyed that?
It's been immensely fun, so much so that I'm on my fifth solicitor in my 3-year property journey. It's tricky. I suppose it comes down to kind of like what's usual, and what's usual in the property world is like standard conveyancing. Somebody either has the cash to buy or they have a mortgage lined up, and the seller, it's very, very straightforward conveyancing. But if you go outside the box and think outside the box there, like with, delayed completions and lease options, a lot of people, just don't want to go near that, including solicitors. In my experience, I actually lost at least one deal because of an unnamed solicitor. So, William, can you just tell us a little bit more maybe about some of these? We'll get straight into it. Like what is a delayed completion, and when is it best used in your experience, and how can like maybe property investors out there use something like this?
Well, for property investors, I think the first thing they know is, if you know what the item is, brilliant. If you know what the term is for it, brilliant. But when you're trying to sell that as a deal to the person you're buying off, don't use terminology. It's like Chinese whispers, okay. Again. Up here, so they tell their solicitor that, and it's not just say what the deal is, what the idea is, where delay completion is. You're going to buy the property, you're in contract to buy the property, but there's a period of time in which it's an extended period of time between you're in contract and you actually own the property. And sometimes you go into the property and you maybe would enter into the property to do certain works. The big one in Northern Ireland is the EPC rating for a buy to let needs to be a minimum rating of E. So if you find a property that is getting an F rating, get into contract. The EPC will tell you it may be loft insulation, it may be changing light bulbs, whatever it is, and then get into contract, delay completion, ask them you want to go in, get an updated EPC once you've done the simple works to get up to an E, and then you'll be able to buy the property, get your mortgage in the property, but they're tied to selling the property.
Okay, so is this a case? So that's one reason why you'd use an EDC, is to maybe do some work on the property. Would just say if you wanted that delayed period to be, say, longer than just say changing a couple of light bulbs, and you might want it to go on for maybe 6 months. Does the stamp duty and all that, when does that become payable? Is it at the time when the contract is closed or when the payment is actually made?
So the stamp duty, obviously before you have to caveat, you have to look after yourself. So when it comes to stamp duty, always speak to an accountant. I'll throw that in there. I'll take an example here in Northern Ireland. The budget came out there, and on the day of the budget, the stamp duty, if you weren't in contract, on the day of the budget came out, you paid the higher rate. See that when you complete it. So it was more the date of contract was severely important. So if you were in contract on the date of that budget, and you complete it 6 months down the line, your SDLT would have been, if you complete it the day of the budget before that, it would have been the lesser rate. Whereas if you're in contract, but you would have only paid that on the day that you got your keys. When I said about the delayed, about changing light bulbs, it's not just, so changing light bulbs takes 2 seconds. It doesn't take any length of time at all, but you are talking a good 3 to 6 month delay with that type of thing, because you know, you go in, you change your light bulb, but what you need to do then the next week is getting an EPC, an energy arrear to go out, get your APC changed, then you need to get onto your bank again, and you need to get your surveyor out to update the survey and get your mortgage survey out. So it is a good 6 months just to change light bulbs, to change an EPC rating. So 6 months is that's just standard. It's more smaller works, it's easier for a delayed completion. Other reasons, it really depends on each transaction. What my clients getting bogged down in is what the deal is. As per se, what do you want to do? Tell me what you want to do, and we will create a deal for you. And we will talk.
I suppose just for listeners, like suppose what we're discussing is property investment tactics using structures from a point of view. Very much we'll delve into each individual one. The first one is called delayed completions, just so in case anyone didn't catch that, and well, let's get into that in a little bit of detail. And a delayed completion, suppose, bring it back a step there, well, a scenario and a delayed completion obviously is something that you that you see, that you think you could do something with, but maybe there's time or there's some situation against you that potentially the individual you're speaking to, the seller or the person who has the property, may consider something like this if it's explained in a way that it benefits all parties. Is that right?
Pretty much, yeah. All you literally need to tell people is what it is on the ground, the layman terms. I'm going to buy your property. But for me to buy your property, I need to do A, B, C, and D. So we'll enter into a longer contract. You'll be in contract. I'm guaranteed to buy it, but I'm not going to give you any money for 6 months down the line. It's really simple.
And an example of that, suppose you spot a property, you see that it's potentially on the market, and there could be an issue, a structural issue, or there could be something that's going to take a lot longer than you perceive, but you're still going to buy that property at the end. Now, can you use that, for example, if there is, as I said, first of all, structural issue? That's always something that a deal falls out of place because there's a structure issue. Or if there's Japanese knotwood or something like that that takes, you know, a number of years to sort, but it can be treated, but it's going to take a year to do that.
You can, but when you come, if we go into terminology, your delayed completion would be minor works. Okay. I would advise a client that for a minor, like changing light bulbs, like putting insulating in an attic, something where you're not ripping structure away, you're not actually doing works that can devalue the property in any way, that would be a delayed completion. So it'd be, or if you are waiting for a grant of probate, say your funds are coming from somebody that from your great uncle from Canada that's passed away, you know, and you know the funds are going to come in the next 7 months, you can enter into that deal. The seller has a security that they are going to sell that property, and they're guaranteed to get rid of the property. And, you know, it's not just for works, it's also for maybe you waiting on finances, you can get into contract seeker.
And let's move on then to say the other create your strategy, William, the option to buy. The difference between an EDC and an option to buy, why would somebody use an option as opposed to a delayed completion or an EDC?
An EDC or a delayed completion is where both parties are in actual contract, a legally binding contract, and nobody can walk away. So that essentially means if you're buying a property, you go into a contract for a delayed completion. Whether or not you get your EPC rating up or not, you have to buy the property. No matter what, you are contracted to buy the property. If you breach contract, then there is repercussions. An option is essentially gives you the option to buy the property. It gives you the choice to buy the property. So we would couple that with other agreements, like a management agreement, where you've got the option to buy the property, but with a management agreement, you go into the property, you will rip out the kitchen, put in a new kitchen, you rip out a bathroom, put in a new bathroom, and as long as you do it within your time period, you can up the value of the property and buy that property or sell that property onto another person through the option at an agreed price. So you don't actually
during the
yourself.
So during the time, say of the, so say there's a small refurb needed, like a kitchen or a bathroom, say, during that period, the person who's buying the property or has the option to buy the property would put their own money into the property in order to do it up. And the only reason why they do that, even though they don't own it, is because they have the option to purchase.
It, essentially, yes, it's because they have the option to purchase, but they've also the option to transfer that option to purchase to a third party. So the way we would normally structure them, so an option to purchase, say we'll work numbers, £50,000 is what the person's looking for the property. The property's a mortgageable, it's no bathroom, no kitchen. You enter into an option to buy that property at £50,000. You spend £40,000, put a kitchen, bathroom, renovations, the property's now worth 150. That option to purchase means that that person can't sell that property to anyone else other than you for £50,000, and anything above that, depending obviously on the option terms, that anything above that is put in your pocket. So you can put that property in the open market, sell it for £150,000, give the £50,000 to the original seller, and then keep the 100 grand.
Yeah,
And that's
yeah, yeah, yeah.
that.
Yeah.
That
That make sense? So there's higher risk with an option agreement. There is higher risk, but it just that's just one example. The more creative that the person that's buying the property can be, as long as the person selling the property agrees to it, it can be done. So it can't be it, that you know your limitations are put on the buyer. So they are
Yeah.
that you know that
Yeah.
that's what limits these deals.
And
And
on that, I suppose from a property investor point of view, it's another tool in your toolbox, for example. Like, obviously as an investor, you have to go and, find the money to do if you're going to go a traditional route. But this is a solution that's very, very seldom spoke about. There are so many properties lying about that people just can't afford to actually do. So options to buy is a real solution there for that. And is that frustrating, well, from your point of view, to get that message across so that investors or, people can understand how to do this as well? Because there is so many, like I think it's 22,000 or something like that, Northern Ireland lying empty. In the south is 160 something thousand, I think is at least. And maybe there's issues there. People don't have the appetite to do it. People just generally don't want the hassle, and money, and suppose they don't have the wherewithal to do that as well. So huge, maybe a huge option, Lisa, for people to consider.
The Solid Foundations Property Podcast is brought to you by Gap Property Investments, helping you get a better return on your money. Check out gappropertyinvestments.ie. CityStay is offering bespoke accommodation for large teams of employees or subcontractors that might require accommodation in Ireland's cities. Check out citystays.ie today.
Yeah, for sure. So I tell you about an option that fell through for me. It was someone, an out of town investor, had a property in, say, my golden area. They didn't know the. They were sick of managing this property. So I agreed to buy it. At the time, I thought it was valued at 200. He wasn't from the area. He thought it was valued at 200, so I agreed to his terms, which was 200, in 2 years' time. But in the meantime, in the 2 years' time, I could rent it off of him, like on a rent to rent basis. So it's like a lease option. So it was a lease and then an option to purchase. And now, unfortunately, so that was the motivation behind why he wanted to get rid of it. He just wasn't from the area. But the thing that let me down was the my when I was coming up to draft the agreement, the my solicitor said, why would he agree to that, like to take that money in 2 years' time? It's going to be obviously going to be worth more in 2 years' time. And I just kind of I let it go. I listened to the solicitor. So that was my failed lease option story. In the end, it ended up being a rent to rent. I did rent to rent it for, I think it was about 18 months in the end, maybe a year, 18 months. But the actual lease option on the end of it fell through because of advice from a solicitor.
essentially a solicitor, we're not really supposed to give When it comes to market advice, we look at what we call the folio. We look at the deed, and we can see what the last property was, last purchased at. And yes, if it was purchased within the last 6 months, at a significant undervalue compared to what you're selling or you're buying it at, yeah, we can question that. But realistically, if two parties agree to the price, as long as I advise you, look, you're buying us at an under market value, I would ask for a form of title indemnity insurance, or as long as there's another solicitor involved on the other side advising his client that they're selling it, then 2 years' time it would be a market value. There's no, you know, where's the risk? That's what you have to ask. That's what business is. Business is they want it rid of the property. They want a certain amount of money. You want to buy the property, just not yet. And you agree to the money they want it for it. You know, that's, you know, that to me, certain solicitors, it just depends on wording and the likes of that there and what way they're told. But yeah, I often find if you're not a specialist in an area and you're maybe running off the court, and it's just like anything else in Ireland, I think, see, if we're not used to it and we're running about and we're doing too many different things and we're not specializing in it, you're scared of it. And if you're scared of it, you're just going to advise against it. So you are, if you understand it. That's why, you know, that's you can see that in every field, so you can.
Yeah, the options to buy, a little bit more creative thinking. The lease option now, I suppose, like if you put it into your head, like leasing a car, it's similar, but there's aspects at the end of the lease. You can lease to buy, obviously. Isn't that correct, Will?
It's essentially basically where you pay, you're nearly running into it. To put it in layman terms, you're renting the property out, CR, for a period of time. And then after, say, for a term of 2 years, and at the end of the term, 2 years, you have a set price you have agreed where you can buy the property for that price. It sounds simple. When you break it down like that, it is simple. Now, the paperwork behind it's not simple. The contracts, the documentation is not simple. But really, that's what it is. It's where you rent the property out for 2 years, and at the end of the 2 years, you have the option to buy the property.
Now, William, on that, though, on the lease option, how sturdy is that agreement for the purchaser, the person buying? So the reason why someone might do a lease option is, I'll give you an example. If, say, someone's selling the property, they want $250,000 for the property, but you can say, look, I can give you, say, 220,000 now. Just say the property's not selling, for example, it's been on the market a long time and they want 250 for the property. You can offer like a this or that offer. So I can offer you 220,000 now, or I can give you 250,000 in 2-3 years time, and in that meantime I will rent this property off of you for an agreed rent during that time. And only at the end of that, then I will purchase it off you for 250 in 3 years' time. So basically, for the purchaser, you're betting that in 3 years' time, by the time you do the refurb work to it or the few upgrades to it, and with the benefit of time, that this property will indeed be worth 250, but even more, you know. So that's the reason why, say, a purchaser will want to do that. And then equally, why would someone who's selling the property want to do that? Well, they wanted 250 in the first place. You can get 250, but you have to wait for it. So it can work, actually. It can be a win-win for both parties. But I suppose my question, William, would be, me being a purchaser, how robust is that agreement, and could the seller kind of swipe it from underneath me, and what would be the process involved in order for me to say no, you've got the option with me on this, you can't go send it to anybody else, it's me? Do I have to bring them through the courts, and how robust is that agreement?
First thing is, when I'm going to speak from my option, my own personal agreements, okay? I have no knowledge, first of all, that the type of agreement I would use has been argued in Northern Irish courts and has succeeded.
Okay.
So the second thing is, as part of my agreement, or the options I would use, would have it's a security called an inhibition. An inhibition is basically a hold put in the property which inhibits anybody else. So someone's going to try and sell the property from underneath you, they wouldn't be able to say me and you had an option, Lisa, just to break it down, and Paul Rick, you tried to sell it to Paul Rick. Porrick wouldn't be able, his solicitor wouldn't be able to register his interest in the property without my say-so.
Ah, okay, so, and that's called an inhibition.
It's an inhibition. So lenders, HSBC, Kensington, the big land, commercial lender, they have inhibitions on the property. Lenders often put an inhibition in the property. It essentially inhibits you from doing anything with the title of the property or registering anything with the title of the property without consent of the holder of that inhibition. To try and put it in as layman terms as I can. And that's one of the securities that's in the document.
Question though, if the seller has a mortgage on the property, so say they've got HSBC mortgage on the property, would HSBC allow you to enter into this inhibition agreement or whatever with another party?
Yes, it depends on what equity is left in your property. It would be something you would need to seek consent from HSBC. HSBC, most lenders are happy enough because you're not actually, essentially, you're not saying that you own the property. You're saying that you have a right over the property to buy the property at a certain price. That's what an option gives you. The option gives you the right to buy the property at, say, the £50,000. So it doesn't give a higher right over HSBC's charge. Under the option agreement, it would always state that once the option amount, say the £50,000, was given to the seller would have an obligation to discharge all mortgages and charges and any other monetary debts against the property out of that £50,000. So once the solicitor actually read the full option, they would understand that, yes, you have a right to buy the property at £50,000, but out of that £50,000, HSBC are guaranteed their money.
Okay, I get you. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Anything else, so, Porrick? Any other options?
Yeah, I suppose it's a first for us on the Sol Foundation's Property Podcast. It is this creative strategy, creative management as such. Well, and it is it's complex, but it's not if you know how to you actually know how to approach it in so many ways.
Yeah, it's when you're buying a property in Northern Ireland, it's a contractual agreement. So it is, and some of the contracts.
Just for clarification, you can do this in Southern Ireland, or is there a different? Yeah. Obviously, a different jurisdiction.
You can do it in every jurisdiction around the world. My experience is only in Northern Ireland because that's where I'm based at the minute. And but I know it's just a matter of changing conditions in a contract. It's just another contract changing the general conditions of sale. There's certain conditions you can't change, and it's just adding to it. As long as you stick to the base foundation of there's a completion date, there's consideration, and there is conditions, and the main conditions of i.e. the property certificates and the title is okay, you're not jeopardizing the person that's the buying the property, you're not jeopardizing the person selling the property. It does get complex in that aspect of it, but really it's simple. You're doing the same thing that you would be doing in a standard conveyance, just adding a wee layer to it, sir. Just saying, right, okay, I'm buying the property. Yes, I'm buying the property, but I'm not going to buy it in 12 weeks. I'm going to buy it in 3 years. Still have to buy it or still get the chance to buy it. Or I'm going to rent the property out. How many tenants have actually bought the properties off their landlords? It's actually, Northern Ireland Housing Executive are able to in Northern Ireland, they actually have a scheme where they can give a discount based on that, where their tenants, if they've been there long enough, are able to buy off the Northern Ireland Housing Executive. So there's nothing wrong with the landlord. So you basically becoming a tenant and then buying the property and having that option to buy the property. It's just the way it's worded and the way the agreement's placed and the way that the buyer and the seller communicate that to their solicitors so that, in my opinion, that too many words, too much terminology is used. So then that there would maybe scare a solicitor that's not as au fait with these likes of agreements. Whereas if you just come up with a deal, let one of the solicitors explain it, or let the solicitors have a couple of conversations to say, how can we make this work for our clients? Because essentially that's what our jobs are, looking after our clients. And one thing that I would say that when it comes to clients, it's not just the purchaser and the seller, lenders are also our clients. So if you've got a mortgage and you're a seller and you've got a mortgage with, like, say, HSBC, we'll use them again. We actually have to represent HSBC and their interests in this. as well. And it seems we are buying a property, it's dual representation. We have to actually represent the lender, HSBC, when we're buying a property, as their interest protected. And their interest, the lender's interest, always supersedes that of the personal identity, or the vendor, the seller, may it be a company, may it be a personal entity.
Yeah. And another one, William, like another kind of creative strategy that I've used there last year, actually, was a bit of vendor finance. So it was a case where it was a big house. There was a mortgage on the property. It was an elderly person, and this person couldn't keep up with the mortgage repayments. It was going to get kind of, being forced to sell, repossessed. So there was maybe 100 grand of equity in the property. So I took the equity. I basically got a loan for the lower amount in order to pay back their mortgage. But the last little bit was contingent on like a condition being fulfilled, and the condition was I was going to put this person up in the granny flat for a number of years. There was an element of vendor finance there. So have you have many cases where you've done vendor finance or helped a client get vendor finance?
But very few. Often, in my experience, it would result in us looking for a second charge or a rest of charge, because really, vendor finances, you get being given equity for a period of time of the property, and I need to protect my client's equity in that aspect. Normally, I would ask for first charge, like a first charge is nearly like your mortgage company, a charge on the property, similar to the innovation, except for stronger, just so that if anybody doesn't understand that. It really depends on the financial aspect of it. So it does, and how much, if it's £100,000, you would be saying to your client, like, are you wise giving, £100,000 to someone that you barely know? They say they're going to do this thing, you would need some form of security to get that back again. So you would,
yeah.
That was my experience, that was my personal experience on it. I have the easiest deals for me are deals which clients are basically buying the full property at £250,000. I've got one there at the minute, it's £250,000, and the seller is basically gifting the full equity of £250,000 to the buyer. So the buyer's going to become the registered owner. No cash is going to exchange hands. They're going to have a first charge mortgage of £250,000 on the property. And he's going to straight in, do works. He's going to pay stamp, all that due, become the registered owner. And then when he goes to refinance it, he's going to repay the £250 back to the person that actually owned the property.
Yeah, so that is pure vendor finance, right? And that and in that period, is the purchaser paying an interest rate to the owner, the previous owner of the property, or just what was the kind of the reason why that happened, say, in that particular deal?
On the two deals at the minute, one's £250, the £250, and there's no interest payments at all. The second deal I've got is about £400, and there is a bit of vendor finance in that one involved, and there is an interim payment of a percentage per month of, so basically it's like £250,000, and then you're an interest payment of 8%, and that 8% is paid monthly, so it is, and it's essentially because the property's been sitting, both properties have been sitting on the open market for more than 2 years. They're not moving these properties. The sellers can't get rid of them. They're getting the money they want for them. They've got their security. And they're getting a wee bit of money over the top because for the delay in that happening. And these people are going to renovate the works and renovate the properties and promising the money and the return back at the end of the deal.
Yeah. There's a good few kind of baby boomers out there, I suppose, at the moment, who are looking to kind of maybe offload some of their portfolio, like if they have a small portfolio, to offload their portfolio. And that could actually work really well for, say, if they don't want to wait to sell properties individually, and it's a portfolio sale, couldn't it?
I could, yeah. You could buy 10 properties in one go, and you could be paying them off over the 10 years. You could buy a property a year, but then you could be claiming the rents from them. Yeah, there's definitely a way around that. And also, again, speak to an accountant, speak to, financial planner, but there's definitely inheritance tax, help with an inheritance tax, just help with tax issues. Mentioned there's, when it comes to a certain age and you offload like that, there's definitely a benefit to doing that tax wise. So there is, what it means then, you've still got your security, your money still sitting in the pot, but you don't have the headache of, I'm saying this, but as a property solicitor, being a landlord and being looking after and owning your own property is a gift, and there is a good profit in it, and there is a good business. But at the same time, when you get to a certain age, when it comes to, you know, as you say, the baby boomers, it becomes a headache, and they don't know what to do with it. So it gets rid of that headache for them, but they still have the money coming in, they still have the cash flow, and they still have every, say, year that generation of the £200,000-£100,000 coming in. It definitely is creative thinking. I just think that, you know, if we thought more creatively, and we just, communication and the convincing process is key. And the more we communicate about it, the more you talk about it with your solicitor and talk about it with the vendor and talk about, and both solicitors talk about it, the easier it is to create a deal that will suit all parties.
Yeah, for sure. So, William, I was asking you this before we came on air. You're based in Belfast, in Northern Ireland. So have you aspirations? Have you any plans? Have you to come down to the south of Ireland to operate? Or what way are you thinking?
Well, the firm I'm in, Lacey Solicitors, are they're highly renowned in Dublin. So we have a Dublin office. So we are both dual qualified. So I will be qualified in Dublin and down south in the next coming, maybe this year.
Brilliant.
A few courses down south, and I'm just wanting to try and ensure that I've got a good grasp of the market, because even though we are a field of a difference between Northern Ireland and Ireland, it's the legislation, the laws are different, so they are, and the processes are completely different. But it's getting a hang of that, and once I've got a proper grasp on that, there I will be coming down to annoy everybody down south.
But it's great having a company though that has a base in Belfast and also in Dublin, because, you know, often as you said, there is only a field between us, and often, you know, there could be a portfolio that could be kind of cross-border, you know, so it's great to have a firm that can kind of you've got expertise in both sides, you know, so it's brilliant.
It's something that it's an aspiration of mine I've got for this year, so it is, and we'll push through with it. Definitely at the amount of like Park himself, Park's good properties both in the Republic and both in the north and the amount of clients I have that both have properties down the south and up north, and I don't like turning down work, so I don't, Lisa. So I think it needs to be I need to sort that out so that I can always say yes when it comes to taking on the new cases.
No better man than Will. And suppose as I say, I work with Will very found him always very straightforward to work with, you know, like sometimes those big terminologies that pop their head out in the property world, it does, as you say, well, it does kind of put the fear of God into some people, and they don't push forward. And obviously, Lisa, you kind of you lost an opportunity due to that fact, and maybe your solicitor didn't understand what they were doing. And suppose it just shows you how important is that power team around you, because look, at the end of the day, if you can create opportunities, create deals, it's business for solicitors, it's business for you, it's a win-win situation if it's done in the right way, in the right manner. But well, I suppose we packed a lot in there for, you know, 25-30 minutes of that complete list of elements that you do, but there's quite a lot there. And as Lisa has indicated, there's not too many firms that are cross-border, you know, that, you know, can specialize in property specifically. But with Lacey's, your career just over the last number of years, you've been in the sector for a number of years, and do you feel that your particular offering to the market at the minute now, it's a lot different than the traditional?
I think in the aspect of the traditional solicitor is a general practitioner, in which you go to court in the morning, you do criminal, you do civil, you do matrimonial, you do property. But now, over the last 10 years, you can see that, especially in Northern Ireland and the South more so, everybody has started to specialise more. I have just specialised in property rather than becoming a specialist conveyancer, which is just buying and selling. It's more property law. And that's the only difference with myself. So it would be, I try to specialise in every aspect of property rather than just the standard purchase and sale process. And you do find that quite a lot of that is happening across the whole island. So it is.
just more crack. You was having
crack. It's that's the funkier the better, Park. You know me, I love a good day.
The word has landed, the funkier the better. Yeah, we did warn Lisa earlier on about that word funky. Just explain for our listeners, it's kind of, it's that creativeness in you, Will. Yeah.
Exactly. It's way back. The more creative the better. More creative the better. I want you to ring me and tell me, look, William, I want you to sit down before I talk to you about this. That's exactly what I want, because that's what makes it so interesting.
Take a big deep breath there, Will. There've been plenty of them.
But you know what's really refreshing? What's really refreshing about that, Will, is to say you want the, like, that's what you like, that's what you want. You know, you want some, but you know, it's like I'm an accountant myself, and I love anything kind of creative. Or I think you've got the foundations, but yet if you've got that creative mind as well, you can make stuff happen. And I think there's so many people out there with property problems who just wants to get rid of their property. They don't want to be in it anymore, but they've just got this mental block. Maybe there's a lot of debt outstanding on it. Maybe they just feel like they can't, there's no one to buy it at that particular price, and they need a set price for it. You know, so if you can just think outside the box, use your knowledge, but actually just use that then to think outside the box. I think there's definitely deals to be done across both Northern and Southern Ireland, right?
Yeah, definitely. I agree. And communication is key.
Yeah. And it is about, I suppose, years ago there wasn't that kind of element of focus around networking groups and things like that to ask those types of questions, and there thankfully there is a lot of that now that has improved quite a lot, and suppose people aren't afraid to reach out. Well, and we'll put your details in the Solid Foundation Property Podcast notes, and we'll put you there as well. And did you get the whole Facebook working yet, Will, or is it still all fairly, you're still fairly serious? Or I see some of the practices over in the UK, like, you know, they're all, you know, they're really, really good. Like, you get young solicitors giving TikTok advice. I love to see that. I can see you in that, Will. I can see future.
You're not catching me in TikTok no matter what. I love technology. Our firm is all for technology. Our firm's got a Facebook account. We post on it every single day. Instagram, LinkedIn, every single day we have a post going out. Myself personally, I have a Facebook account. I looked at it last, I think, in November. I'm terrible at it.
The Ryan Serhant of solicitors across Northern Ireland and the Republic, of course. But we'll get you there. No, but in fairness, I think that aspect of social media is kind of taking down the barriers as well, you know, and it's not as very corporate. Lisa was very corporate in her back in the day, but now I think that aspect, you know, is definitely making it a little bit easier for people to break down those barriers, get the key information, and as you say, you love to get something funky. So anything funky, you can sort out, William.
Yep, other than TikTok.
Donald Trump loves TikTok. What do you love it?
And another
it
was good enough for Donald.
Yeah, good enough for Donald. Well, Lisa, that was a brilliant 45 minutes or so speaking to William. You picked up loads of nuggets there, no doubt.
Yeah. So I think my ideal podcast would be having William and maybe Brendan Allen or an accountant, having a solicitor and an accountant, and just grilling them with loads of questions. What do you reckon, Porrick? Do you reckon that would be the dream podcast?
You would love that. I would throw the feet up and fall asleep. You know, it's kind of,
what you need is a solicitor, an accountant, an estate agent, and a pub. Video £5 a Guinness in and £6 a Guinness in, and then see what actually do we talk about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Guys, that's a bit more like it.
You know, you get cracked. Yeah. You just tax, you just roll your eyes again, you know, go, jeez. Irish people love tax, they love talking about it, you know, just hate paying it. That's the only thing you not to pay it. Brennan's good at telling you that, isn't he? Lisa?
Yeah, no, he surely is. Yeah. No, he's brilliant. It was really good, William. And it's great to see you kind of, you know, people have this kind of thing. Oh, geez, you can't say this to a solicitor, you know, but having people like you come on, like young solicitor who's eager for the kind of, you know, to educate people, to tell people that there's more ways than the standard way of doing things. It's really good and it's really refreshing. And when you come down to Dublin, we'll get you into a property network and you can help promote your business there then as well, William. That'd be great.
He's the only solicitor that's on WhatsApp, I have to say as well, like, you know.
Yeah. Porrick, now that we'll not talk about your voice notes. Come on now. After all,
it's been the first edition of the 2025 Property Podcast. As per usual, we came out of the block fantastically fast with the one and only William Wilson. Head over to his website, lacysolicitors.co or .co.uk or .com. Is it William? Which what have we got? .com. Got it right. Check out the socials. You can find him there. Lisa, you got to get your goals right. You got to get your hang on a second. You're not a teacher, are you, by any chance? Because the amount of holidays you get every year, my wife's going to kill me whenever I say this. You're away again to Australia. Before we let you go, you're away again. You're only back half an hour, and you're going again, huh?
Yeah. No, look, I was in the corporate world for many, many years. And the one thing I used to hate when I was in the corporate world was having to go to my boss and say, please, can I take a holiday and request holidays? So when I gave it all up 3 years ago to get into property, this was my number one, was to go on however many holidays I can go on without asking permission from anyone. So I'm not going to apologize to anyone. I can't wait.
I do enjoy. That's all from us on this edition of the Solid Foundation. Don't forget, check us out on our Facebook page. We update stuff on that. And also give it a wee like if you like the podcast. Thanks for all the positive feedback. We hope to make 2025 just as good. We have the Northwest Property Meet. If you're listening to this on February the 24th, it's a Tuesday night. The dates could be wrong there, but it's a Tuesday night, the last Tuesday of February. Do come along with some amazing speakers. Network with like-minded people as well. If you like the podcast, share it out. Let people know that you listen to it and tell them all about it. Good night. God bless. Enjoy the weekend if you're listening to the weekend. If you're driving to work, enjoy work wherever you're listening. Thank you very much. And we'll talk to you on next month's edition.